This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Mr. Durham, what's happening?
Good morning, Pack. Great to be with you. Looking forward to a great show today. Ken Segura will be here. Our two-a-days today continue with Georgia Tech and Wake Forest. Dan Cotton, the radio voice of the Deacons, will join us. Looking forward to visiting with both guys, talking about their respective schools as well. Griff McGarry, who shut them down in Columbia SC when he sent DBU to the showers on, what was that, Sunday, I guess? Yeah, Sunday will join us. Looking forward to talking to Griff, the Cavalier pitcher, as the Wahoos are on their way to Omaha. Number 9 will be here at 8:30. That's NC State head baseball coach Elliot Avent. Always a laugh, always two laughs, maybe even more. But his team has got to be thrilled, and I think they depart today, Pack, for Omaha. And then Tom Luganville, 9 o'clock, by the way. Tom Luganville, the Blue Ostrich, makes his triumphant return to the Packer and Durham program at 9 a.m. this morning. It is a full Wednesday of Packer and Durham presented by New York Life, sir.
Yes, sir. New York Life on board. That's always a good thing. You got to get sponsors. Keep telling you. Nothing gets done until something gets sold. That's all positive. But we're going to lead off today bragging a little bit. You know, if you got it, flaunt it. Say it all the time. If you got it, flaunt it. You know, people don't like it, hey, do something about it. Well, guess what? When it comes to big boy sports, and again, we're talking about revenue producers here, football, basketball, baseball. Those three in particular, football, basketball, baseball, men and women in hoops. There is only one conference in America, Wes, since 2015 that has brought hardware home in all of those sports. Football, men's basketball, women's basketball, and baseball. And that would be the Atlantic Coast Conference. And for some, you may be surprised at that stat. That would be a bar bit to impress your buddies. Because a lot of folks, if you ask that question to them, they wouldn't answer ACC, but that is the truth. The league's been pretty good in that department. And again, two teams going to Omaha with NC State and Virginia. We'll talk about them a bunch today and the rest of the week. And but big picture, the conference has done a pretty nice job here since 2015 in the department of winning championships.
Yep, exactly right. With one more up in the air, obviously, in Omaha in a couple of weeks. But you start looking at what the ACC has done, and the numbers are pretty good. Third among most major conferences in that period. And, Pack, the men's basketball, the football, and the baseball. Jumps right off the page. Women's basketball, too, just jumps right off the page, doesn't it?
Well, it does when you start talking about the quote-unquote, they call it the revenue sports, right? Football, basketball, baseball. Like I said, the league has been able to check some boxes in that department. Obviously, from a football perspective, Clemson's been on a ridiculous run, and that will probably continue. You would have got to figure. When you start talking about men's basketball, this league basically has been the standard for a long, long time, even though I would tell you this past year wasn't a vintage year. But traditionally, basketball is the bread and butter for the conference. Women's basketball has obviously peaked. Notre Dame wins the national championship. Louisville and NC State have incredible programs that are certainly Final Four and championship worthy, and there's some others that would like to join the mix. And Virginia won the national championship in baseball in 2015, and the Hoos are on another one of these kind of crazy magical runs, and we'll discuss this later in the program, how interesting the 2015 deal was. Slow start, got hot, won close games. Next thing you know, they're knocking off Vanderbilt, winning the championship, and here come the Hoos again. They're right back there to Omaha. Slow start in the league. Been winning a bunch of tough, grinding out kind of games. Win the regional, win the super regional, and here they're back in Omaha. So you never know what will happen in that front. But I would tell you, though, and you and I have discussed this, Omaha has not been kind to the ACC big picture. However, when you start talking about winning championships – since 2015, the ACC's got that box checked. They're looking to do it again coming up here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, don't forget, since when Virginia won in 2015, It was the first time in 60 years it had happened in the ACC. There are a lot of really good baseball teams that have gone to Omaha out of this conference that did not scratch it. Florida State, Clemson, teams of that ilk. But when Virginia won in 2015, it changed the dynamic of kind of the way the ACC is looked at. Is that Daniel Pinero? I think so. Nonetheless, the Cavaliers are back in Omaha for the first time in 6 years. Elliott Avent and NC State are there for the first time in 8 years as the as one of college baseball's, well, the marquee event in college baseball starts on Saturday.
That would be true. Presented by Dish.
Thank you.
Be absolutely true. You know, the setup's a little bit different this year because I'm so used to this week normally. I know we just went through a pandemic, didn't have this last year, which stunk, but it's great that we've got baseball rocking and rolling in June now. But I'm so used to everybody getting into town and they have a celebration and a parade and, and they treat these guys like kings, man. I'm telling you, it's an incredible event. And normally you get, you know, like the Thursday, Friday, this thing gets started. And I always remember that because normally I'll have Thursday and Fridays off in the afternoon because we've got baseball going on. Mm-hmm. It's one of the other reasons I love this tournament because I get some time off in the middle of the summer. But they've switched it a little bit. And so everybody, like you mentioned, Virginia heading out of town and NC State and all that stuff, everybody get to town. But the first games aren't until Saturday. So you'll get a dose of a doubleheader on Saturday, a doubleheader on Sunday. And then it really gets interesting Monday and Tuesday when you start getting the loser games at Hates. Two and barbecue and great runs come to screeching halts because every one of these teams, and this is why I love this tournament the most of all the NCAA tournaments, you cannot backdoor your way in to Omaha. You got to figure it out. And I know people that called in screaming, oh, man, the SEC's always hosting. Hey, you know what? It's a capitalistic society, man. If you are willing to put up the money and you think you can justify it, go for it. Ain't nobody stopping you. Go for it. If your teams are good enough, you will earn the right to get there, much like Virginia, much like NC State. They didn't play at home. Poor Virginia, they were down in Columbia, South Carolina for 2.5 weeks. Seems like it. Again, I've got family down there. So, you know, if you want to go visit for a long weekend, that's fine. How about 2 weeks down there? You know, it's cool when you're winning. You could deal with, you know, 98-degree temperature and 135% humidity. But Virginia found a way to win. They didn't play a game at home. NC State had as tough a road as anybody in the country. And they go to Ruston, Louisiana. And let me tell you something. Louisiana Tech had flat-out play. Great fans. Great venue. And you know what? They swept those dudes down there. Elliott and the boys went down there, getting yelled at, screamed at, didn't care. Beat them. Then he went to play at number one Arkansas. Nobody in the SEC has figured out Arkansas all year. They didn't never lost a series. As I said the other day, you know, that is true. An incredible team. I mean, a great team. But you know what? Arkansas never won in a series against an ACC team because NC State went in there and beat them twice in front of that crowd and Kevin Copps and company. So NC State has really gone about the hard way. They've had to go on the road at two of the best venues in all of college baseball against terrific teams, and they are still standing. So, like I said, you cannot backdoor your way into Omaha, and that's why I love this tournament. And, you know, if you have a bad day, it's not like you're out. You know, unlike March Madness, I don't care what that number is. You have a bad day, you're going home. Baseball, you get another whiff at it, right? I mean, all right, we get a mulligan. But you can't lose two. It's two and barbecue. So, can't wait, man. Saturday and Sunday will be outstanding if you love college baseball.
Pac, don't you think, too, that the road mentality, even in Virginia's case with the 10, 12 days in Columbia, that will serve both NC State and Virginia well? Because, as you said yesterday, these are the only two national seeds not in the event. I mean, right? These two teams have kind of stormed the party a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
But the fact that they're the underdog, I think, has to serve them pretty well once we get going on Saturday.
Yeah, right. When you look at the field of eight, right, when you look at the eight teams are still rocking, look who was at home. Mm-hmm. NC State's playing Stanford. Well, you know, Stanford had to go on the road, too, to Lubbock. And ask North Carolina how much fun it was going to Lubbock.
That's impressive.
You know, you ask Duke the last time they got to the Supers. They had to go to Lubbock. It is a tough place to play. And Stanford went on the road, and not only did they shut them down with great pitching, they beat them like nobody's business with the bat. Stanford and NC State have to be – the two teams probably coming out that you went, wow, that what Stanford did to Texas Tech just does not happen. But at least Stanford was able to host a regional. So they got a taste of some home cooking, even though they took it on the road and got to Omaha. Vanderbilt, Arizona is the second doubleheader game on Saturday. Vandy hasn't left town. Arizona, they didn't leave town. Virginia then plays Tennessee. Yeah. The Vols have been outstanding, but they never left Knoxville. Yep. Never left Knoxville. Texas takes on Mississippi State. Ditto. You know what? Austin, Texas, and Stark Vegas were great fans, great teams. So the two teams we're talking about, NC State and Virginia, don't have a number beside their name. Everybody else does. So you got all those teams, like 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, and 9 seed teams. They're still alive and kicking. Virginia and NC State are the ones that are like, hey, you know, who gave you guys an invite? We, nobody did. We just knocked the door down. We're here to play some baseball. So, but they've gone through the test of having to go on the road and figure it out, grind it, and get the job done. So I don't think that hurts them at all. I think mentally that they will be sharp. I think they are sitting there going, hey, we're playing with house money. We got nothing to lose. We're a really good team. You don't get here if you're not. And both of them are hot. That's the other key. They are playing really, really good baseball.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I think it's interesting because that mentality that both had, the way Virginia won their series, especially the Super against Dallas Baptist, but NC State even more so. And we'll talk with Elliot Abin about this at 8:30 this morning. The mentality of his baseball team right now has got to be feeling pretty good about their ability to go battle in adverse situations. I mean, it just does. I mean, you don't go to Arkansas. You don't go to Ruston, Louisiana. You don't go to Arkansas and win those series without, kind of working through it, especially when you lose 21-2 on Friday night. Phew. I mean, that part of it just adds to it. I mean, because, look, you and I were in that text group on Friday night, and we were not feeling good at all about, where the old Wolfpack was, right?
So, I mean, I'm not going to –
that was not good.
I'm not going to tell you who sent this to me because it's an ACC person. He sent me a text on Friday night and said, Pack, at what point in time do you turn it off? And I thought it was a fun question. In fact, I'm thinking about actually using it for the afternoon show. But when you're watching a game, at what point in time do you sit there and you go, all right, I've been invested, but I can find better things to do. And my response to that on Friday when NC State was getting woodshedded by the Hogs was, when it reaches double digits, I think I've made an effort, but now, we'll catch you on another day. It reminds me, quite frankly, last night of my beloved San Francisco Giants, who were taking on Drew Brooks' Arizona Diamondbacks, and my boys gave up 4 runs before they got an out last night in the first inning, and then they gave up 3 more in the second. They're down 7-0, and I'm like, all right, I'm good. And they came back and won. Yaz hit a grand slam in the eighth, and they came back 1-9-8. My point is, there are some times you're just better left walking the dogs, right, and just saying, all right, we'll catch you tomorrow. And the fact that NC State was able to come back from a 21-2 against the best team in baseball on the road in that venue is, like I said, I thought it was their best win in a long time. And I'm talking about decades upon decades upon decades, regardless of sport.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Talk about the Hoos and the Wolf Pack this week. Taking it to Omaha, Nebraska. Man, I am jealous we're not going. I am jealous that we're not going to be there. But the road to Omaha, Wes, is never easy. Like I said, you cannot backdoor your way in to being one of the final 8 still standing. But the eerie similarities about what Virginia and NC State have done looking in the past and how they got there, it's kind of interesting what's going on, especially with Virginia.
Yeah, I think Virginia is... look, the Cavaliers have a different script than 6 years ago because they stormed out of the gates. Remember, they had lost in the College World Series the year before. They kind of, were thought of as a team that could be there. But the way things changed in the script was that in February or January, you thought Virginia might be there. And then by the time you got to April, you weren't sure Virginia was going to make it after the start. And Brian O'Connor was asked Monday night about watching this particular team grow throughout the season?
I think if you ask a couple of players, you know, during the Notre Dame series earlier in the year, we pulled everybody into the pitching facility that we have. And I did not show poise. I was not calm. I lost my mind, quite candidly. But as we grew and learned throughout this year, and that's what it's about, right? And about them learning how to handle moments, right? How to handle challenging, difficult moments. When you're on the mound on the ninth inning, you got that ball in your hand and you are deciding whether your team goes to Omaha or not, right? That is learned through experiences. It's learned through how you talk to the players, the things you say, how they talk to each other, and the culture of which that this program that they play in. And I'm proud as hell of that, right? And it starts with our staff. Right. Our staff, our players will follow our lead. Right. And, you know, I told the team when we got off the bus before we walked into the stadium, I told them the calmer, more poised team will prevail. Right. And they've earned this opportunity, and the team that does it the right way and controls their emotion will prevail. So just proud of them.
It also helps when you hit grand slams in the seventh. That poise part with three guys on base and going yard really helps. But Coach is right. And Virginia's played that way. They played that way in the regional. Again, when you lose the first game of a regional, and again, they played South Carolina. Remember, that regional was in Columbia. They had to see the Gamecocks, who ironically were the two seed, Virginia the three. And they lose right out of the gate. When you're coming out of that loser's bracket, man, it is hard to do. It's hard to do with you're in a regional, much less you get to the super regional and you got to win two, like NC State and Virginia did, or the College World Series. You lose that first game, man, it is an uphill climb the rest of the way to kind of get back there. You have another day. You got to use arms and all that stuff. So Virginia has gone through the ringer. Again, no games in Charlottesville. Everything on the road. Start behind the eight ball from the get-go. They have found ways to win. And I think the mental toughness of Virginia and NC State will really come into play this week. That is something you better have that packed when you get to Omaha, because it's not going to be easy. Hey, we never lose a game. Everybody's going to go through highs and lows in Omaha, I assure you. And Virginia's been through it, and I think Coach is right. That poise of, hey, don't overreact. Let's just go about our business, take care of it, hold on to the baseball, good pitches, catch it, hit it. I mean, it's fundamental baseball, but that's exactly what Virginia's doing.
No, and I think you're right. I think when you start comparing 15 and 21, and I know we've got some numbers here to show you, but the idea of that Virginia quality and the characteristics, pillars of the foundation, you know, all these things that come into play. Look at the first half and the second half and then kind of the regional seeds and all the things that happened of similarity here. You know, remember they took three to Maryland. They obviously beat Dallas Baptist in three. It is intriguing, right? I mean, it really is when you start thinking about who this Cavalier team was in 15 and what this particular team is in 2021, Pac.
And I'm not telling you it's going to be easy. Like I said, they're going to see a Tennessee team on Saturday is out of sight. And they're having a great year. They're playing with a ton of swagger. And we gave you that crazy stat yesterday that, you know, both these teams have been playing baseball since the 1880s and 1890s, but it's going to be the first time they've ever seen each other on the baseball field coming up on Saturday. It's a great matchup. And Virginia's arms, again, we didn't even see Stephen Schock coming out of the bullpen, given all the notoriety that Big Donkey 47 had doing his dog and pony with the Dippin' Dots. We'll have that an exchange that I had with him later on in the show, which was funny. But we didn't even see him in the Super Regional. So Virginia's going to throw some arms at you, that which will include Griff McGarry, who will join us coming up here in about 40 minutes or so. But I think if you're Brian O'Connor, I think behind closed doors, he's got to love the toughness of his team. I think Elliot Avent would probably tell you the same thing when he joins us next hour.
Yeah, I think that there's the mental toughness, and then there's the kind of the now you come back from a regional and you go to Omaha, and how does this team kind of go next level when they get to Omaha? And, you know, there were players like Peyton Smith on that College World Series team, Daniel Panero at shortstop, Matt Theis, who was a catcher. They had two great catchers, by the way, which really helped them. Joe McCarthy, who was a great story. Remember McCarthy, the outfielder, all the things that, you know, kind of transpired in his career. Who are those guys this year? They're there. Don't get me wrong. I understand that. But I'll be interested to talk to Griff McGarry a little bit about that. NC State scenario, I mean, you start thinking about 8 years ago when they went, and it's Carlos Rodon, it's Trey Turner, it's so many different wrinkles to what NC State was at that time. And they go out there and they end up playing, what, Carolina in the first round, right? Remember that? I mean, unbelievable. NC State and Carolina have been playing 10,000 years in baseball, and somehow or another they end up playing each other in the first round in Omaha. Which was weird enough, but nonetheless, I think Elliott Avent has this thing identified, and this is why I think he's been successful with the way he's tried to do it at NC State. And he talked about what making the College World Series is about for the current team and the ones that went 8 years ago and others in the Wolfpack program.
It's all about the players. It always has been. The reward for coaches, to me, is the reward in seeing your players get something they work so hard for that you try to talk to them about it all year. You talk to them about hard work, accountability, sacrifice, all those things leads to what's going to be the greatest experience in their collegiate life, and that's going to Omaha, which I've had a lot of great teams, and a lot of teams fell short, and you don't know how many former players we have that are going to be here at this event. The 68 World Series team, I was told, is trying to get out there, which they went the first time. So when a team from NC State goes to the greatest event that college baseball has to offer, then every player that's ever played in your program feels a part of that, as they should, because they built something that allowed this to happen.
Coach is right, and that'd be a tough ticket.
He's got
too.
Figured out.
Yep, I was out there in Omaha in 13 when all that was going on, and again, I'm just thrilled for Coach for both these teams. I mean, they've been through the ringer. Like I said, NC State starts 1-8 in the league. Virginia was 4-12, going nowhere fast, and expectations were high for both of them. And you're like, man, what's going on in Virginia? What's going on in NC State? But you know what? They figured it out when it mattered the most, coming down the stretch when you need to be good, when you get into May, and if you're lucky enough to still be playing in June. And lo and behold, they both are, and they're both heading in Omaha. And we wish them the very, very best.
NC State also has a little bit of a story to tell from 2013 to 2021. And again, this is kind of fun to look at just kind of how it started. Look, they were a terror in 2013. Right, Pack? I mean, they were a terror. And so was Carolina, and that's what made interesting having the rivals out there together at the time. But you see the 5-10 start in 21 to the 14-4 finish. Look at the finish in 13, and look at the finish in 21. Maybe we've been missing this baseball thing all along, Pack. You know? Maybe we've been missing this whole you got to finish strong concept. We now look at it and see it with Virginia. We see it with NC State. The start's important, but it's not as critical as the finish, right?
Well, you got to play your best baseball or your best football or your best basketball and fill in the blank on that when it matters the most, right? When the lights are the brightest. And NC State's done that.
Yeah.
What's been really impressive, though, about NC State is when they get away from Raleigh. Now, I already talked about, you know, winning the series in Ruston and winning in Fayetteville, which nobody does. They've been nothing short of spectacular on the road. And you know what? After seeing those crowds, and we'll talk with Elliot next hour about this. I'm curious to get his take. I think playing in Ruston, I said it last week, I thought playing in Ruston would help them going to Fayetteville as far as the noise, the crowd, the ambiance, and the quality of teams. I think it will also help them when they get to Omaha. The fact that NC State's been such a dominant, not good, but dominant road team in baseball, I think that's going to help them immensely when they get there in front of the big crowds that await them out there in Nebraska. I think they will feel totally comfortable with the environment. Now, they're going to take on a Stanford team that's red hot too. And again, that's why you watch on Saturday and Sunday and get a dose of doubleheaders at you. Because again, if you love baseball, this is a tremendous event. Let's get ready to get started on Saturday.
I'm just trying to sort out all the former players that'll be out there. I mean, we're talking like Tim Stoddard and Greg Briley and Joey Devine and Tracy Woodson. I mean, we're talking about like the luminaries. I know, well, Elliott's going to have to present a list to us at 8:30 now of guys he's talked to who, you know, are looking to get that ticket, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be no different than if you're Carlos Boozer for Hubert Davis rolling in there for Coach Kasler. I mean, it's going to be the same deal. Hey, this is an event now. We want to be there. And if you're an NC State, NC State or former Virginia baseball player, this is a big deal watching your boys on the big stage now. It's going to be good stuff.
No doubt. No doubt.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham two-a-days continue. We go to Atlanta. Ken Segura, longtime Georgia Tech. Now he's gone full backyard on us. It's like Ken Segura's garden hour is getting ready to take place here on Packer and Durham. He's covered Georgia Tech for the AJC for a long time, and we appreciate his time this morning. June is kind of a quiet deal for everybody but football coaches, Ken. So let's take the spring and mm-hmm. push it through the summer here. And where is Jeff Collins in year three? Because it seems like Sims, Gibbs, he found a lot of answers a year ago, although didn't find as many wins as I know he'd hoped to.
Yeah, that's about it. They've had two good years of bringing in the guys they want. They talked a lot about establishing the culture. And I think this year, year three, is a year that I think, you know, the staff certainly and certainly fans are wanting to see a change, an improvement in the win-loss record. They've got some, I think it's 19 guys that had started four games last year back, so there's plenty of experience, but they just got to get better at making plays and avoiding mistakes. I think it probably goes with a lot of teams, but I think especially so for Georgia Tech.
Well, you mentioned the mistakes, and when you start going through the numbers, we just did the 2-a-days and we included Duke the other day, and there's some parallels between what Duke experienced last year from a defensive standpoint and turnovers, and I think the same thing with Georgia Tech. The good news is a lot of guys are back, but they've got to clean that up, Ken. I mean, they're not in a position where they can turn the ball over 25 times and say, guess what, with our schedule, we're good to go. I mean, that's got to be something where guys coming back understand when you have the football, hold on to it. And as talented as Jeff Sims is, you just can't have a one-to-one ratio with touchdowns and interceptions. That's got to improve in 21.
Yeah, I mean, you start with Jeff Sims. You saw last year what he could do. A terrific playmaker, really nice arm, can be really accurate. But as you said, 13 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, that's not the ratio you want. I think a lot of the interceptions were kind of fluky, but at the same time, there were a lot of throws, too, that weren't interceptions that could have been. He also completed 55% of his passes, which has got to improve. And I think, certainly you hope as a Tech fan that as the pass protection improves, they've got a couple, Devin Cochran, a transfer offensive tackle from Vanderbilt coming in, who should be a big help. And just that line, getting better with Brent Key, receivers potentially getting better, that'll improve on it, on its own also, apart from what Jeff does. But I think as a second-year starter, you want to see some improvement in all those areas, accuracy and touchdown interceptions. And I think if that can happen, ideally for Tech in a significant way, then that changes a lot of things for what they can do this year, I think.
Ken, I want to get to the schedule before we're done here because it's rugged. It may be one of the hardest in the ACC. That being said, Jeff Collins has also gotten into the grad transfer market. And in Roddy and I, in doing the spring game, noticed – one, Kyrick McGowan from Northwestern can fill the box up for them in terms of his versatility on offense. But to me, the guy who may have had the bigger impact is the linebacker transfer from Maryland, Ace Ely. That guy seemingly has come in and changed what they may be defensively in some ways.
Yeah, both really good examples. McGowan came from Northwestern, playing the slot, but can also play running back, return kicks and punts, can play outside really fast. I don't remember, he made a really nice play at the end of the game. I think he was running across the middle and caught a pass from, I think it was similar to Jordan Yates. But yeah, so he's someone that can definitely help. AC Lee, as you said, you know, he'll you know, replace David Curry, who was such a force for Georgia Tech over the last few years, and is someone that they're going to need to be a playmaker. Another one, as I said, is Cochran, who's going to play left tackle. He comes from Vanderbilt, another grad transfer. Yeah, because he didn't play in the spring game. Actually, he did. But yeah, so they got three guys right there who you figure, you know, can come in and play and help immediately, not just be, you know, average type players, but should be able to help you on both sides of the ball as far as becoming playmakers and really making things easier on the offensive side for Sims.
Ken, two parts here. The first question is, you're not vacationing at Butler Cabin at Augusta National, are you? Seriously.
You'd probably be seeing security lifting me away if that were the case. I have a 9-year-old whose wake-up time is definitely not 7:30. And if she heard me yapping about Georgia Tech, this would be you'd see a grumpy 9-year-old coming through the shot in about 10 seconds.
So, okay, I keep waiting for like two guys wearing white bibs carrying golf bags to walk behind you at some point in time during this interview. But I digress. You know, getting back to Georgia Tech, though, are we going to have a sense where, much like last year, I thought Georgia Tech was improved last year, even though the win total was still at 3. I almost get a sense with 21 that I have no doubt Georgia Tech will be a better football team than they were a year ago. And I know Wes is going to get to the schedule here momentarily, but you could at the end of the day say, you know what, they're much improved, but as far as the win-loss total, it's still not where we want to be.
That's entirely conceivable. I mean, they were better, but, you know, kind of the bottom line, you know, points scored and points against, they were still, you know, they were 14th in the league in both. And so obviously you could still, you know, you get to the middle even, and that'd be an accomplishment. But you're still not where you want to be record-wise, and the schedule is certainly a part of it. But they've, you know, last year they lost 73-7 to Clemson. So you can improve by 30 points or 40 points and still being some trouble, and obviously that was kind of, you know, every game can be kind of its own monster, own animal, but yeah, so there's improvement they can make, and I think, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they were the win loss record were to the point where I think fans will be happy, but it's going to be a real challenge for a lot of reasons, you know, one being the schedule and two being just they've still got a lot of ground to make up.
All right. You've talked about the offensive line and Cochran and some of the other guys they're excited about. I know Jordan Williams is a freshman they really like that they're pretty pumped up about. All that, not only does it benefit Jeff Sims, it really benefits Jahmyr Gibbs. And Ken, the facts are facts. Roddy and I talked about this a little bit when Pac was on vacation. Jahmyr Gibbs could be the breakout star in the ACC this year if Georgia Tech gets off to a good start.
Oh, no question. A terrific playmaker, speed, power, agility, can make plays in the hole. He can catch the ball too. He's probably someone that maybe not a lot of ACC fans know about because, you know, Tech's record was what it was. He'll have a chance, I'm sure, to show what he can do. And, you know, if the line's better, if, you know, maybe they're not depending him so much and they can get in the ball in different ways, just an electric player to watch. And right. I think he could break up players is a great way to describe what he could be this year.
Ken, I'm not worried about
right, that being said.
Go ahead, Wes.
I'm sorry, Pike. That being said, here's the schedule. Northern Illinois and Kennesaw State, one would hope 2-0, right? At Clemson, Carolina downtown, Pittsburgh at home, all before you get to Duke in October, and then you're at Duke, at Virginia. But then the kicker is these back five, Virginia Tech, at Miami, BC, who we all know is much improved for the first time in Atlanta in years, seemingly, at Notre Dame in November, weather bingo, and then Georgia at home. I mean, that's it. That's as good a schedule as anybody in the country is throwing at you from a rotation piece and non-conference, for that matter.
Yeah, it's going to be the challenge that Tech always faces. You start every year playing Clemson and Georgia, and certainly the last, you know, 5-10 years, those teams have raised the bar even higher than they had been. And then you throw in Notre Dame going there, playing the week before Georgia. It's a lot. And obviously the Coastal is always a dogfight. And, you know, certainly Wes, you know, you like to think you can get past Kennesaw State without much problem, but they're obviously a very good team even at the FCS level. You know, certainly you could make a very good argument. I think that it's the best, strongest, schedule in ACC, and you'd put it up against anybody nationwide too. I would think it's going to be a fight for sure.
You mean at Clemson, at Miami, at Notre Dame, North Carolina, Georgia at home? That's a problem. Is that what you're trying to tell me, Ken? That could be a headache for somebody.
That's what they tell me. Yeah.
I think that would be, again, you got to be realistic as a fan, because anybody barking about, well, if they don't win eight games, hey, take a step off the ledge a second and get in the real world.
Yeah.
At Clemson, at Miami, at Notre Dame, Georgia's going to be great. North Carolina's going to be a top 10 team. You get them at home.
Right.
That is a brutal schedule. And, you know, that doesn't mean everybody else is a layup. I mean, those other games are going to be fist fights too. So it's a tough, tough uphill sled. But you know what? That's what you sign up for if you're at Georgia Tech, academically and then, of course, to try to turn around this football program. One more thing for me. We talk about, Gibbs, and he's going to be terrific, and Sims has got great upside. I think the bigger issue for Georgia Tech, though, is can they stop somebody? And like I said, much like Duke, you got to hold on to the football this year. You can't just give it away. And defensively, they got to go tackle somebody, because last year that was a problem.
Yeah. I mean, 37 points per game kind of says it all. They're saying that it's a school record, unfortunately, for them in the wrong way. But, you know, a bunch of effort guys, they will not lack for that. But, you know, especially up the middle, they got to get bigger and stronger and be able to keep teams from doing what you're seeing on the screen right now. And, you know, I think another great transfer they're getting, Keon White from Old Dominion. He was in 2019, he was, I think, 19 tackles for loss. And, he had, I think, 5.5 against it was when they played Virginia Tech. So he's done it at that level. So he's another guy that they're going to need to be a playmaker, difference maker. You look at guys like A.C. Lee, and I know Jeff Collins, I think he's been on with you guys before. He was saying about how the secondary, which is pretty experienced, they've got to be better. As much as you make a very good point, Mark, as much as the offense, I think, can be better, it really is going to be the defense first, where they've got to make a vast improvement.
All right. Ken Segura, we're really impressed with the backdrop and the nature sounds in the month of June. The real trick will be, is he willing to do it in November, right, Pac?
Well, as long as you don't focus on the weeds behind me, we'll see. Yeah.
I trust the mental toughness of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I do. I think you'll bring it in November when it matters the most. I do.
There you go. All right. Yeah. All right.
My word on.
Ken, thanks.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Yesterday, Wes, we had a number of dignitaries on the program, including the 7th appearance on this fine show from John Waldhack, who's the director of athletics from Syracuse University. And we really did address a number of different issues.
Boy, sure did. We started off with the college football playoff expansion proposal. And we asked John if the move from 4 to 12 was feasible.
It's complicated, Wes, but I do think it's possible. And number one, start with the overall premise. All right, sports is the most popular form of entertainment in this country. Okay, that's a given. And the NFL is, you know, they're in a league by itself. But right behind that is college sports. And I think from a media perspective, college sports continues to remain one of the best values for any media company. And college football, the growth, the success of football, college football, the ratings in college football, the creation of the 14 playoff, you see the ad sales, the media sales. College football is incredibly, incredibly powerful and incredibly popular amongst the advertising community. So I do think it's possible to go from 4 to 12. It's complicated. Now, ESPN has the value of incumbency, and you can never underestimate the importance of that. And Jimmy Pitaro is incredibly bright, and Burke Magnus, and that, you know, I work day in and day out with Burke for over 20 years. An incredibly bright guy. They will use that value of incumbency to ESPN and to Disney's advantage. But I do think it's doable. It'll be complicated, but don't underestimate the value and the importance of collegiate sports to any media company.
In the idea of taking a legendary player who's built the women's side and now moving him to the men's side and the emotional retirement and John Desko's phenomenal career at your institution, you know, sometimes the easy road and moving that one guy can sometimes also be the tougher emotional road, right, John? I mean, I don't think I'm trying to cross and make this thing any bigger than it is, but that's not as easy sometimes as it seems on paper, I think.
No, it's a really good point, Wes. And by the way, just you think of the three guys, right? You know, Coach Williams, Coach K, and John Desko, right? Mm-hmm. Coach K won 5 national championships. Coach Williams, 3 at Carolina, right? Coach Desko, 5 at head coach. You have 13 national championships. You're walking out the door. I mean, 3 incredible legends, Hall of Famers, and they should be. And I think when I knew John was going to retire, and John Desko is pure class, and he's still going to be around the program. Gary wants him around. I want him around, and I think that'll be good for the program and the continuity. But when we looked and said, who's the right coach? Not who's the right alum, who's the right coach? And we really did our research. You know, Gary's name just, you know, it came to the forefront. And he is a lacrosse savant. And his knowledge of the sport, his passion for the sport, his creativity, what he's injected into the women's game, what he brought to the men's game as a player, but also as a coach. You coach the Canadian national team. You coach professional lacrosse. Lacrosse is, it's, you know, outside of family, lacrosse is Gary's life. And I just think when you take his track record, his resume of success, the fact that he's an alum, the greatest player of his generation, known as the Michael Jordan of lacrosse, you know, it's there. So why not do it? At the same time as we've got a short list of candidates to succeed Gary on the women's side, and we're going to continue to support and resource our women's program to compete for championships. So, you know, Mark, as you said, lacrosse is a big deal here. It's a really, really big deal. People care passionately about it. And, you know, we have 3 major sports at Syracuse. So, you know, it's football, both basketballs, and both lacrosse programs, because that's how they're covered.
One last thing for me. We're sitting in now in the middle of June. Are we any closer with name, image, and likeness as far as being in a good place, or are we still in no man's land?
Well, I think in some ways we're still in no man's land. And in my opinion, what's needed, and you've heard this from many of my peers in the ACC and other conferences and commissioners, we need national legislation because we need – we need all 50 states and all schools in all 50 states to operate under the same guidelines and parameters. And I'm supportive of name, image, and likeness. We've got a number of things in the planning stages here, which we think are going to help benefit and educate our student athletes on their ability to take advantage of name, image, and likeness. But we need one set of playing rules that levels the playing field for every NCAA school.
The timeline on this, it seems like sands are running through the hourglass a little bit, right? I mean, we're kind of in trouble here against the clock. And the reactionary piece that Pac talked about last week from the NCAA is, it's a little concerning, John, to be honest with you, that here we are crawling up on July 1 and we don't really have any markers in the road on this thing.
No, we don't. And you've got states that have passed legislation. The effective dates are different. The parameters of what a student athlete could do are different within those states. So it creates turbulence. I'm not going to use the word chaos, but it creates turbulence, right? I think the Senate Commerce Committee meeting last week, Senator Cantwell is the majority leader. Senator Wicker is the ranking member. I think that was a positive development, and that's – you know, we're at a point now where if there's going to be national legislation, I think we need to look to what's occurring in the Senate Commerce Committee and see if that can be the catalyst to begin that process. Is it going to be done by July 1st? Of course it isn't. But could it be done, in early fall? what we're told is there is the potential of that happening, but we need one set of standards for all of us.
You know, Pac, I think I heard you say this yesterday after you replayed the interview or going into the interview on SiriusXM last night on your off-campus show. John Wildhack is maybe the premier voice in terms of the relationship between television and college football that the athletic administration now has in major college athletics. Because of his experience, obviously, with ESPN, 20-odd years there, and the marvelous job he did building a lot of these agreements. But if you listen to John Wildhack on other issues, name, image, and likeness, facilities, all the other things, coaching transitions, he just, I think, mentioned it with Gary Gate and the lacrosse move that Syracuse made. He's become, very quickly, one of the leaders in athletic administration when he didn't really come from that line, if you know what I mean. You know, he comes from the other side, if you will, the business side, back to his alma mater to do this. And every time we have him on, I think he sheds light on perspective and really how something gets done in major college athletics.
He is one of the most interesting athletic directors you can talk to. And I said it yesterday on radio. I said it on this show. When it comes to understanding the world of television and the world of college sports, I'm not sure there's another person on the planet Earth that is better educated and more equipped to answer a question than John Wildhack. And that is a strong statement.
I agree with that.
But as far as, hey, been there, I've been in both chairs, if you're John Wildhack, as a television executive and understands the business of sport. And he's also sat in the chair to run an athletic department and understanding the needs of student athletes, boosters, what it takes to run a corporation. He is sharp, he is smart, and he has a complete handle on the big picture. And I always make mention on the radio show, there are certain people for me in college athletics that when they speak, you should pay attention. You should stop what you're doing and pay attention. And John Wildhack, to me, is one of those people. So we're lucky in this league to have him. Syracuse is beyond fortunate to have him running the show. But he is one sharp executive, and I'm glad he's on the home team, if you will. He's a good dude.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.